rubbed my arms as my skin prickled. Upon closer inspection, I saw the wood of the altar was elaborately carved with moths and moons, the same as the door to Rebecca's room back at Eclipse House. Next, I inspected the stone pedestal. It had been fashioned into a perfect full moon, and it had been charred as black as the ring on an Eclipse moth's wing. I touched the surface. It was cold enough to make me shiver. Something made me shiver anyway. This is who we are. I wanted to leave the clearing and go back to Eclipse. If Joanna thought I was going to be scared away by this place, she was wrong. I already knew the Calyptra had some strange mystical beliefs and practices, that our gift derived from something old and archaic. So what? There was nothing wrong with a little ritual in life. What were Easter and Christmas and Thanksgiving and Halloween, if not holidays of ritual? There were plenty of pagans and Wiccans still out there in the world, worshipping their ancient gods and goddesses of nature, and I wasn't afraid of them. And the Calyptra, their worship, their magic and ritual actually worked, so it made even more sense for them to be involved in something as abnormal as this. The whole thing made me want to throw my hands up into the air, turn right around and hurry back to Eclipse before anyone realized I was gone. This was just a meadow where the Calyptra performed some kind of ceremony they hadn't told me about yet. Nothing more. Except there was an Eclipse moth painted on the rock face, similar to the ones painted on the rocks of the lake. Only this was much bigger. Wings spread 6 feet high and wide. Only where the thorax of the moth should be, there was a long, narrow opening in the rock. It was the entrance to a cave. I had only been inside a cave one time in my life. When Aaron and I were 9, Mom took us on an impromptu road trip to San Francisco. That was where we'd been headed anyway. Aaron started feeling too sick before we'd even crossed the border into California, so we had to turn back. The highlight of the truncated trip had been visiting the Oregon Caves National Monument. I went on the tour alone while my mom and Aaron waited in the car. Inside the cave, it had been cool and surprisingly dry, and so quiet and calming it made my heartbeat slow like I might slip into a trance. At one point, the tour guide told our group to turn off our headlamps so we could experience what absolute darkness felt like. I switched off my lamp along with the others, and we were plunged into air as black as ink. For a moment, I'd felt utterly at peace. Then a random thought. What if this is what death feels like? Ended my peace and began a panic-induced asthma attack at the idea that my sister might disappear into such darkness, such nothing, such death. Our guide had to cut the tour short and take us back to the entrance. I didn't like caves anymore, and I didn't want to go inside this one. I listened at the entrance for several minutes, hoping I would hear some sound, a bear grunting, a mountain lion hissing, the maraca of a rattlesnake that could send me running back to Eclipse none the wiser about what lay inside that cave. But there was only silence. I held up my lantern, took a breath, and crouched to enter the cave. Once I was inside, the cave widened out quickly. I was grateful since I was not about to crawl and worm my way through some underground cavern system. But it appeared that I wouldn't have to do more than duck to make my way through the tunnel. I couldn't quite see the end of it, so I didn't know how far I had to go. Instead of looking straight ahead, I kept my eyes on the ground in front of my feet so I didn't step into a hole and twist my ankle. I'd been moving steadily forward for what seemed like an hour, but was probably more like 10 minutes when I raised the lantern to check whether I was getting close to the end. I should have kept my eyes down. I took a step forward and the surface beneath me disappeared. I didn't even have time to scream before I clattered to the ground among what felt like a collection of oddly shaped sticks and stones. A lightning flash of pain tore through my arm, and I felt the bone in my wrist, the same wrist Aaron had broken, snap with a sound like a tree branch breaking. I heard my lantern shatter the same moment I landed at the bottom of the pit, and then there was absolute darkness. Darkness and terrible, pulsing pain. But just before my lantern went out, I saw all I needed to see. Bones. A carpet of charred human remains, the skeletons of countless people, filled the bottom of the pit into which I'd plummeted. Clutching my broken wrist, my teeth gritted against hot stabs of agony, I scrambled toward the wall, trying to find a place to stand that wasn't ankle deep in scorched skeletons. This is who we are. My fingers scrabbled at the wall of the pit, but it was nearly vertical and too smooth for my fingers to find purchase, even if I had the use of both my arms. I was trapped down here, trapped with the blackened remains of God knew how many victims. My panicking mind rewound to the conversation I'd had with Rebecca, in which I'd asked her if she'd ever taken human anima, and she'd answered so shamelessly, yes. It hadn't occurred to me to ask whether she'd taken the anima of more than one person. This is who we are. In the darkness, I let out a scream of anguish. I didn't expect it to do me any good. But a voice I knew came from above me, a voice nearly as anguished as my own.
Kenna, you shouldn't have come here.
Darkness. Cyrus, is that you? I asked, even though I knew it was him. If he had a lantern or any source of light, he didn't use it, so the darkness remained impenetrable. He didn't respond to my question, and panic threatened to turn my mind into a cyclone of destruction. I took a breath and let it out, fighting to retain a semblance of calm. It was the only way I would get out of this alive. Because the Calyptra were killers. This is who we are. I thought about the anima Rebecca had been feeding me from her culling jars, how insatiable my hunger for more and more and more had become, and now I understood why. She'd been giving me human anima. For how long, I didn't know, but standing in a pit surrounded by human remains, I was pretty damn sure that was what she'd been doing, and that this had been going on for a long time. I thought of what Cyrus had told me about my own mom's insatiable hunger for anima, how it had driven her to do anything to get rid of it, and I wondered what had really been going on. Had Rebecca been dosing her, all of the Calyptra, with increasingly potent forms of anima? Had they not realized what was happening until it was too late, until they were too addicted to ever stop, and they could never leave Eclipse, and they would be her children, under her control forever? Maybe they weren't all like Rebecca, and maybe they were victims. But I knew my mom would not have brought me to Eclipse if she'd had any idea what her mother was up to. I think I broke my wrist when I fell down here, I said in a whimper to Cyrus when he didn't respond. Can you help me get out? Still no answer. How did you find me? Now my voice was shrill. I was on the verge of losing it. If he didn't say something soon, I would start to scream again. I wouldn't be able to help myself.
I couldn't sleep, he said finally, his tone deadpan and hollow. I was at my window when I saw you sneaking through the yard.
I wasn't sneaking, I lied. He couldn't know why I'd come here, or that I'd seen what was down here. I couldn't sleep either. I wanted to go for a walk.
A walk in the woods in the dark? A walk inside a cave?
He had me there. I like caves. I was just curious what was inside. He laughed, but there was no more humor in the sound than there was in a sob.
You like caves, huh? Well, I'm guessing you didn't find this one to your taste.
Cyrus, are you going to help me get out of here or not? I'm in a lot of pain. I need anima to heal my wrist.
Of course, he said. But first, I want you to tell me the truth. What did you see down there?
See? I didn't see anything. My lantern broke and my wrist broke, and my mind is going to break if you don't get me out of here.
You swear on your mother's life you're telling me the truth?
I hesitated, even though I'd never put much stock in swearing on anything. Yes, I swear. Now for God's sake, please help me.
All right.
I heard a scraping sound, and then an orange flame burst to life in the darkness, searing my eyes before Cyrus lit his lantern, illuminating the pit and its jumbled collection of charred bones, illuminating the truth of what the Calyptra were. Cyrus met my eyes, and I saw the truth in them, that he didn't believe my lies. He had known even before he lit his lantern that I already knew what was hidden in the tarry darkness of this cave. I clung to the side of the pit and stared up at Cyrus's face, a face I had kissed less than 24 hours ago. A face I had found irresistible enough to make me betray a guy I loved. Why? I asked him, begged him,
tears of frustration and agony and rage filling my eyes, blurring my vision.
You would have found out eventually, he said,
his voice somehow cold and affectionate at the same time. He reminded me of Rebecca, both loving and removed.
Besides, you were lying. That was obvious.
My body shook. Cold sweat slicked my back and my brow, and my teeth chattered. I wondered if I was going into shock. What are you going to do to me? He hunkered down by the side of the pit.
That kinda depends on you.
He stroked his chin for a moment and then rose to his feet, staring down at me with equal parts pity and sorrow. Then he turned and walked away. Cyrus! I screamed after him. Cyrus! Cyrus, come back! But he didn't return, and the farther he moved down the cave, the darker it became in the pit, until darkness was all there was. In the pit, time crawled forward with a snapped spine and two broken legs. Seconds were minutes. Minutes were interminable. Hours were eons. For a while, I was in shock. I went numb, even to the throb of my broken wrist. I stopped feeling fear or panic or disgust at the press of knobbly bone joints against my ankles when I tried to move. There was only a zombie-ish numbness in my limbs, a slowing of my heartbeat until it seemed I would slip into death, and death would be like I once feared, an absence of all light, all being. It would be nothing. For a while, I was dead. I was nothing. But the scraping, insistent need for anima brought me back, reminded me that I was still alive, despite the hollowness in my chest cavity, like my heart had been removed. There was nothing living inside the pit from which to call the anima that would have healed my wrist and sealed up the awful emptiness that was spreading through me. Hours passed, or maybe it was days. It was impossible to tell. I didn't hunger for food or water. Anima was the only thing that could save me from the torment of dying cells and withering organs, and the fluttering roar of wings in my ears. I imagined moths inside my head, beating against the walls of my skull, trying to worm through my ear holes and escape. A fever turned my temperature up until sweat poured off me, soaking my clothes. The fever shifted to chills, and I lay on the ground, curled in a ball to warm myself. I shivered so hard I made the bones in the pit rattle like they were waking up, coming to life. Next came the sensation I was being eaten alive by army ants, pinching off bits of me and whittling me down. Soon I would look like my fellow residents of the pit. I raked at my skin with my fingernails until I was raw and bleeding. When I slept, which I hardly dared to do, nightmares waited for me. Harrowing dreamscapes in which I witnessed my mom and Aaron being slaughtered, not only by Thomas Dunn, but by Jason as well. I tried to stop them from killing the people I loved, but they turned on me and tore me open with knives, and instead of blood, wriggling gray worms spotted from my wounds, worms that metamorphosed within seconds into white moths with round black eyes on their wings, and the moths converged around me, probing me with the needle-thin ribbons of their tongues, penetrating the skin and sucking at my blood. When I tried to run from the moths, I slammed against an invisible wall, and I turned around and around until I understood that I was trapped inside a glass jar with 1,000 madly fluttering moths. I was in one of Jason's killing jars, and I was never getting out, because this was truly where I belonged. Not at Eclipse, but in a jar.
I wish it didn't have to be this way.
A voice spoke inside the nightmare, barely audible above the roar of moth wings.
I know you're suffering right now, but it will be over soon.
The voice was Rebecca's, and it wrenched me from one nightmare into another. I opened my eyes. There was light now, and after my long spell of darkness, it was like acid in my eyes.
Kenna, my grandmother said from above me. Are you listening to me?
Yes.
My teeth chattered so hard I could barely speak. My mind felt slow and stupid, and the joints of my jaw ached as though they'd rusted like ancient machinery. I blinked up at Rebecca and saw her kneeling beside the edge of the pit, a candle held in her two hands, the light turning her blonde hair to shimmering gold. After so long in the dark, she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, the most beautiful thing that ever was.
How long?
How long have I been down here? I rasped. My throat and tongue were as dry and rough as sandpaper. I'd sweated and cried out nearly every ounce of moisture in my body.
3 days, Rebecca said, her brows drawn in sympathy. I am sorry about that, but you know what they say about curiosity. I would have told you everything in time.
Once I was addicted to human enema, I said. Once you had me under control so I could never, never leave you.
Leave me? She asked innocently. Why would you ever do that?
I realized then that my grandmother was, quite possibly, insane. Not padded room and straitjacket insane, but megalomaniacal, narcissistic, cult leader, self-delusional insane.
You kill people, I said.
Cull, not kill, she clarified. Remember, there's a difference. Think of those lives that sustain us as sacrifices to superior beings. We aren't greedy. We cull only a few times each year, and we store the anima so we can make it last as long as possible. You see, once you take human anima, you'll never be satisfied with any other kind.
That's not true, I said. You could stop. I culled a person and I lived without it for years.
You call what you were doing before you came to Eclipse living?
Rebecca shook her head.
Don't be naive, Kenna. You're smarter than that. I've been giving you human anima since you first came here. You think you would have been satisfied with the anima of flowers and plants after how much you culled?
Tears filled my eyes and spilled over my lids. Maybe I had willfully deceived myself, or maybe I was just stupid. Either way, I couldn't change it now. All I could do was try to fix what I had done.
You were supposed to help me, I said, making my voice steady, fighting not to break down completely, to succumb to the misery that threatened to dissolve me into a sobbing puddle. Why did you do this to me?
Rebecca blinked in surprise, as though this should have been obvious from the start.
Because you're my granddaughter, and you belong here with me. I love you, Kenna. I loved you the moment I laid eyes on you and saw my face in yours, and I knew I had to do whatever it took to keep you at Eclipse with your true family. I'm sure I'll love your sister, too, once she's one of us.
No, Rebecca, no, I changed my mind.
I clawed at the wall of the pit, sending explosions of pain through my wrist and up my arm, and not caring one bit.
But I haven't, Rebecca said. You were right. She's my family, my blood, and she deserves a chance at what you have. It's only fair.
She won't want it.
I realized as I said it that it was true. I'd deceived myself into thinking Aaron would want to be Calyptra, that she needed to be Calyptra. But she would never choose this life. She had always been the better person, the better twin.
It may take time, but she'll learn to accept our way of life, just as you did.
Rebecca smiled down at me, radiant and queenly.
I brought a few things to help you prepare for the ceremony.
She set her candle on the ground and lowered a basket tied to a rope over the edge of the pit. When it reached the bottom, she let the rope fall.
I must go, she said. We have to get everything ready for your sister's transformation. It's going to be a busy day.
I peered inside the basket and saw three items. I pulled out the first. It was the green dress Ilya had made for me, which matched my eyes perfectly. The next item was a white mask in the shape of an eclipse moth's wings, black holes where the eyes would look out. The same one I'd seen on Cyrus's wall, that the people in Sunday's paintings had worn. The third item was wrapped in a silk scarf. I lifted it out, held it in my one good hand. It seemed I could feel it pulsing like a heart ripped from a chest, radiating heat and life. The hunger in me opened wide, a ravenous canyon of a mouth waiting to be fed.
Now don't waste that, Rebecca cautioned.
It's the last of our supply until after tonight. Get yourself healed and cleaned up, and someone will return for you at sundown. She departed then, but left her candle burning on the ledge above. I set the jar on the ground and unwrapped the scarf from around it, revealing its true shape. A human skull. I thought of the items I'd seen in Cyrus's trailer. The wallet and Leatherman with someone else's initials. What had they been? ALP? I couldn't remember, but I wondered if they were the initials of the person whose anima was contained inside this jar. I reached for the lid, and then pulled my hand back as though burned. Every cell in my body wanted what was in the jar, but how could I take the anima inside now that I knew where it had come from, and what it would do to me? There would never be a point at which enough was enough. I would want human anima forever, and I would hate myself for wanting and taking, and then I would want it all the more to bury what it made me feel. Or perhaps eventually I would come to think of it the way the rest of the Calyptra did, as a necessary evil. The price of being extraordinary, of feeling things no one else could feel and seeing things no one else could see. The entitlement of being a superior being, a god. It took every ounce of willpower I had left, but I stood, clutching the jar. I hauled back my good arm, ready to throw it. But I didn't. I couldn't. I slumped to the floor among the bones, despair wrapping me like a cocoon. I cracked open the jar, and a mist of shimmering, opalescent anima leaked out. Threads of energy emerged from the palm of my hand and reached for the anima, sucking at it and drinking it in. I couldn't resist. I wasn't strong enough. I removed the lid and took all it had to offer. Transformation.
Kenna, it's time.
Cyrus's words fell on me from above like drops of warm summer rain. He lowered a rope ladder over the side of the pit, and I climbed out and stood before him. The anima had healed my wrist and ended the terrible catharsis that had shriveled and sickened my body. Now I was as glorious as a blazing sunset. In the dark of the cave, my skin shimmered with otherworldly light. Cyrus looked me up and down, his eyes coming to rest on my face, which was partially hidden behind the eclipse moth mask. He nodded approval. He wore the same mask, and he was shirtless, his chest painted with branching white lines of vena.
"I've missed you," he said, and leaned forward to kiss me.
With the anima churning through my veins, the kiss felt like being reborn. I closed my eyes and saw worlds spinning on the backs of my lids. I sank into the kiss, wrapping my arms around Cyrus's neck and breathing him in. He broke the kiss before I was ready to let him go, then took my hand and led me from the cave. When we were near the entrance, I heard the Calyptra's harmonious voices singing in unison, a strange, repetitive chant I'd never heard them sing before.
Matrem apelamus vobis, matrem apelamus vobis, sangui net igni, matrem apelamus vobis.
I didn't know the words. They were sung in another language that sounded like it might be Latin, but even though I didn't understand them, I picked up the tune quickly and began to hum along. I was one of them, after all. I was Calyptra. My voice belonged with theirs. When we reached the entrance, Cyrus kissed me once more and then ushered me through. I emerged, reveling in the smell of forest air, of cool night on my skin. The trees were frilly giants, bowing over the meadow, and the sky was a canopy of sapphires and diamonds. My eyes lowered to the meadow, where a bonfire blazed in a circle around the stone pedestal. Through the flames, I could see a woman lying on the stone, bound with ropes and gagged. I couldn't see her face, but she was definitely a woman. The bonfire obscured my view of her, but I could make out the shape of her naked body and shoulder-length blonde hair. The Calyptra were arranged in a wide ring around the fire, the women wearing long dresses that appeared almost to be robes, the men shirtless, their chests painted with the same thin white lines as Cyrus. All of them wore masks in the shape of an eclipse moth's wings, their eyes peering out through the dark moon circles in the middle of the white. My grandmother was resplendent in a crimson gown with a neckline that plunged past her navel, her hair a golden cape that coiled to her hip bones. Her mask was more elaborate than the others, practically a headdress. She looked like a high priestess, an ancient goddess whose mere existence commanded devotion. But even Rebecca faded when I saw who stood beside her under the altar. Aaron. Instead of a mask, she wore a white blindfold over her eyes, along with a loose white shift dress. She was frail again, her bare knees knobby and her arms pale and skeletal. The look of her must sicken Rebecca, I thought, but my sister wouldn't be like this much longer. This time, when Aaron emerged from her chrysalis, she would be changed forever. We would finally be identical. Rebecca glides across the meadow toward me, her arms held out as though to embrace me. Instead, she took my hand and led me to the altar made from twisted branches, which also reminded me of Vina. She gazed at me proudly, and I wanted to bask in that pride, to feel deserving of her affection and love. But something had changed. I was filled with anima, heady and drunk with it, but somehow the effect was not as all-consuming as it should have been. The fatalistic thoughts and emotions that usually stayed buried when I took anima clawed toward the surface of my mind. This is wrong, I thought. It was all terribly wrong. Aaron would never want this. She would never allow an innocent woman to die so that she could live.
Matrem apelamus vobis. Matrem apelamus vobis. Sanguine et igni. Matrem apelamus vobis.
All that lives must die, I chanted in my mind. All that lives must die. Rebecca raised a hand to silence the Calyptra's chorus. Then she lowered that hand to take Aaron's and stood at our center, linking us in a short chain. I peered over at Aaron and saw she was smiling in a dizzy way that told me she had been given anima to keep her calm, to sedate her. Had the woman on the sacrificial pedestal been given anima too? Beneath the haze clouding my brain, I wondered who she was.
Tonight we call upon the mother to make this child one of us, Rebecca intoned. We offer blood and light to the mother. In exchange, we ask her to bestow upon my granddaughter, Aaron, the gift that will transform her, that blessing that will allow her to lift the veil and see beyond the mundane, to breathe the breath of life and become what she was meant to be.
The woman on the pedestal must not have been sedated well enough. She began to struggle furiously against the ropes binding her. Rebecca called to Cyrus.
Cut her! Let her blood call the mother home.
Cyrus drew a knife and reached quickly through the flames to slash at the woman's bare torso. The woman tried to jerk away from him and ended up rolling onto her side for an instant long enough for me to see the tattoo covering her back. A moth with wings laid across her shoulders. I sucked in a silent breath. The woman cried out as Cyrus's knife sliced into her. He brought the blade back smeared with red, dripping blood onto the grass. Cyrus held the knife high in the air and called.
Matrem apelamus vobis, sanguine et igni.
Then I heard, from above, the sound of wings brushing the air. I looked up and saw it. Her.
Matrem,
Rebecca said in awe, squeezing my hand and gazing up at the descending creature.
Isn't she beautiful, Kenna? Isn't the mother magnificent?
Yes, I whispered, and I meant it. With the anima in my eyes, the mother of the Calyptra was not monstrous. She was moonlight made into wings. The sight of her dazzled me, stunned me, made me forget for a moment why she was here. Made me forget the tattoo on the naked back of the woman who was to be sacrificed in exchange for Aaron to be made Calyptra. But the other Kenna, the one smothered beneath a shimmering blanket of anima, knew who the woman on the pedestal was, and she fought her way to the surface. The mother descended into the clearing and hovered over the pedestal, assessing her bleeding victim. Her thorax was the size of a child, her black, bowl eyes as large as fists, and her wings as long as my legs. For a moment she hung in the air, as though deciding between the blood and the fire. She chose the blood. She alighted on the body of the sacrificial victim, on my own mother. My stomach turned to ice. I glimpsed the eclipse moth's long white ribbon of a tongue unfurling to suck up the blood it was offered, which poured from my mother's stomach in a torrent. Its tongue plunged into the open wound and snaked under her skin.
Mom! I cried,
tearing my hand out of Rebecca's grasp as the real me, the Kenna I'd been trying to hide from, charged forward and took control, swimming through the anima trying to drown me in exuberant joy while my mother died. I darted toward the fire and the stone pedestal.
Kenna, no!
Rebecca grabbed at my dress, trying to pull me back, but I wrenched free of her. I must have startled the eclipse moth because it withdrew its tongue from my mom's wound and juddered into the air, where it hovered over the flames, its black portal eyes staring down at us. Cyrus stepped into my path and tried to grab me, but I darted around him. I didn't know what I was doing. I only knew I had to get to my mom. I had to save my family. My real family. Then I felt a searing pain on the back of my head, and I was yanked backward. Cyrus had me by the hair, and he reeled me in like he was reeling in a fish. He held the knife smeared with my mom's blood to my throat.
"Let this happen, Kenna,"
he hissed into my ear, sounding harsh but also pleading, as though some part of him was sorry for what was about to happen.
"Rebecca knows what's best for us," he said. "For all of us. She'll take care of you and your sister the way no one ever could. She'll be good to you the way she's been to me, and eventually you'll forget the misery that was your life before. You'll be grateful."
I watched, helpless, as the eclipse moth touched down on my mom again and unfurled its tongue.
"Let her go,"
Cyrus said close to my ear. He kept one hand fisted in my hair and the other holding the knife to my neck.
"Where are your people now?"
A part of me wanted to do what he said, to let the eclipse moth have my mom. But that part wasn't the real me. That part was the thing I'd become. I heard my mom's voice in my head, singing. "Sweet girl, don't cry. Sweet girl, I hear you sigh. I'll be here when you wake, so you won't be afraid to dream alone, to dream alone." Now I understood what those lyrics meant. My mom's lullaby was both an apology and a promise, her way of telling me she was sorry for keeping me away from the one place where I didn't have to dream alone, and a promise that she would do her best to always be there for me when it came to real life. She had failed, but that didn't mean she hadn't tried. Tears began to stream down my cheeks, and the love for my mom that had been tainted and distorted by all of our mistakes, by our disastrous history, came rushing back into my heart. It gave me strength. I drove my elbow into Cyrus's stomach and felt his grip on me loosen just enough for me to make a break for it. Cyrus reached for me again, but a blur of dark hair flew at him and knocked him to the ground. "Joanna." They tumbled to the grass, and Cyrus's knife was jettisoned from his hand. The Calyptra gasped and murmured, all of them high on anima, none of them seeming able to comprehend what was happening. This would be my only chance. Joanna scrambled for the knife, and when she had it brandished in warning at Cyrus, she raised her eyes to mine.
"The mother, Kenna! Call the mother!"
For a moment I was confused, thinking she meant my own mother. My mind was still fighting for clarity against the anima in my system. Then it hit me. She was talking about the eclipse moth. Was it even possible? I couldn't cull other Calyptra, but I could cull their goddess. It was the eclipse moth's anima that had made the Calyptra what they were. So maybe it would have to be enough. I reached both hands toward the eclipse moth, and hundreds of threads of energy exuded from my palms and whipped toward the mother. The threads connected, but for a moment nothing happened. Then the mother spasmed as though hit with a bolt of lightning, and her energy poured into me and filled me. It consumed me as I consumed it. The eclipse moth's anima made human anima seem like a sip of wine in comparison. This was the anima of a goddess, and I was taking it all as the monstrous moth began to come apart, its wings turning into powder, its thorax shrinking and crumbling like old clay. Around me, the Calyptra cried out and fell to the ground, writhing in pain as though I were hurting them too. And maybe I was. The mother had made them. They were connected. So why was I not writhing in pain like them? Because I had taken the mother's anima? I didn't know. My consciousness was being devoured by the anima of the eclipse moth. The mother's body hit the ground and broke apart like a sculpture made of dust. Its anima spread through me. Mania took hold of my brain, and I was swallowed by a singular need. Light. Light.
Light. Distantly, I remembered what Cyrus had told me about Moss Anima being forbidden, because when it was in you, the compulsion to go into the light was undeniable. Everyone knew a moth couldn't resist a flame, even if it would be its doom. I had always been a moth, unable to resist those things that could destroy me, so this would be my well-deserved end. I turned toward the fire, knowing on some level what was about to happen, but unable to resist, because I wanted this, too. Not the moth part of me, but the real me. I walked toward the fire, ready for what was to come. Fire cleanses, and I needed to be washed clean of the terrible things I'd done. This would be my sacrifice, the payment for my many sins. I was an inch from the licking flames when a hand grabbed my arm, and the owner whirled me to face her. Rebecca's face was livid, her once beautiful features pinched in pain. Her skin appeared to be both shrinking against her skull and melting off it. Her hair began to fall out in handfuls, and her lips pulled tight against loosening teeth. She was aging, I realized, aging rapidly now that the divine connection to her goddess was gone.
"Do you realize what you've done?" Rebecca shrieked in my face.
The flames called to me. I tried to turn away from Rebecca, to continue my path into the fire, but she dug her fingernails into my arms.
"You've destroyed everything,"
she screamed, her eyes bulging like they were about to pop. The hair rained off her scalp, leaving gray patches of skull beneath.
"We'll die now. We'll wither and die, and so will you and your sister."
"All that lives must die," I told her. "Even you." I shook free of Rebecca, and her legs buckled backward, bones giving way and snapping like ancient wood. She fell to her knees, wailing to the sky, and I turned once more toward the flames.
"Kenna, please, don't move."
The voice was one I knew better than any other. It had been with me for as long as there had been a me. I looked back again to see Aaron pulling the blindfold from her eyes. The dizzy smile was no longer on her face. Her anima high had faded fast. She walked toward me slowly, holding her hand out as though inviting me to take it.
"Remember the hospital, Kenna? When I asked you to say goodbye to me and you couldn't do it?"
I nodded.
"I get it now," she said, tears shining in her eyes. "I can't do it either. I can't say goodbye to you, so you don't get to leave me. Do you hear? You don't get to leave me."
I felt wetness on my cheeks and realized I was crying. The fire called to me. I wanted it. I wanted to be inside the light. Still, I was crying and nodding.
"Deal," I said,
my voice so hushed I wasn't sure she heard it. But that didn't matter. I ripped the mask from my face and tossed it into the fire. I was through being a moth. It was time to be the flame. I knelt beside my grandmother's broken, diminishing body. She was coming the age she should be, I thought vaguely. A weak old woman. That was all she was. She looked at me, her face a horror, eyes sunken into her skull and caved in mouth opening and closing like that of a fish out of water.
"Please,"
she croaked.
"Please."
I knew what she was asking, that I save her from the death she had avoided for so long. I nodded, and I gave her what she asked for, what she had earned. I put my hands on her and felt my vena emerge and connect to her body, and then the mother's anima poured from me, and with it the compulsion to give myself to the light that would kill me. Beneath my hands, Rebecca's body knit itself back together, and she became beautiful once again, a goddess, the queen of her own small kingdom, or maybe merely its mother, albeit a tyrannical one. When it was done, I stood, my head and my eyes finally clear. The world returned to normal, and I welcomed it. I welcomed the world as it was, and I hoped it would welcome me in return. Aaron ran to me and wrapped her arms around me. We held each other for the first time in years and watched as our grandmother walked into the fire. Rebecca cried out in exultation as flames gobbled her dress and hair first, and then began to boil her skin and cook her flesh. The sweet, smoky smell of burning meat filled the air. Rebecca stood under her wooden altar, a woman on fire, and screamed in delight until she couldn't scream anymore. She clung to the altar, and it caught too, and went up in flames.
The triumphant smile never left her face, even when her lips were gone, even when the skin on her face was charred to black. The Calyptra, all of them, remained crumpled on the ground, although they were no longer writhing. They were moving sluggishly, like people who'd been in comas, but were just starting to wake. Joanna raised her head and looked at us. I wouldn't have recognized her if it weren't for those black eyes of hers. Her hair had gone completely white, and her face was a nest of wrinkles.
What's happening to them?
Erin asked, her voice tremulous. I think they're turning the age they would have been if they hadn't become Calyptra.
Anya,
Joanna said, reaching a hand toward the stone pedestal. Erin and I went to work quickly, scooping dirt onto the fire and putting it out enough so we could lift our mom's body off the pedestal and onto the cool grass. She was unconscious from smoke inhalation, and blood continued to gush from her stomach. The wound on her side was deep. It could be fatal if we didn't act quickly. But I didn't know if I could do what needed to be done. Joanna crawled through the grass toward us.
Use my anima, she said, her voice weak. What's left of it? I want Anya to have it. I'm human now, mortal. You can take it.
Erin's eyes went to mine, huge and terrified.
Can you still?
She didn't need to finish the question. I shook my head, not sure what the answer was.
I don't know. I might not be Calyptra anymore.
Try, Joanna rasped. You're different from the rest of us. You didn't choose this life. You were born this way.
I looked at her uncertainly.
Are you sure?
I asked softly, hesitant to take another human life, or another life ever. I didn't want to be Calyptra anymore. But maybe I didn't have a choice.
I'm sure, Joanna said. It's my choice.
Thank you, I told her.
And then I put my hands on her and sighed in relief when I felt my vena emerge and connect to her body. Her anima swelled through me, but I didn't let myself enjoy it. I closed my eyes as she withered, and then I turned to my mom. Erin had used Cyrus's knife to cut the ropes binding our mom and remove her gag. Mom's eyes drifted open, and when she saw us, she smiled.
My girls, she said. My babies.
My vena connected to her like some alien IV, and her back arched as Joanna's anima filled her and sealed up the wound in her side. When it was finished, she sat up and she hugged Erin and me tight to her. We wrapped our arms around each other, and the love I felt from my family, my true family, was the best anima I'd ever known. Around us, the Calyptra began to climb to their feet, with the exception of Joanna, her body a withered husk. For a moment, I worried the Calyptra might pose a threat, that they might try to kill us for what we'd done. But looking around at them, I saw how frail, how diminished they were, and I knew they were no danger. Their masks had fallen from their faces, revealing aged, wrinkled skin, eyes dimmed like dying light bulbs, some filmed with cataracts. I recognized Ilya, though her lava-colored hair was now a cottony white cloud. She wore a cloak over her dress, and she removed it and laid it over my mother's naked frame. Her eyes turned to me, and she said, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Then she drifted away, not down the path to Eclipse, but into the forest in the opposite direction. The other Calyptra mimicked her, murmuring apologies and goodbyes, before wandering away into the night. I cried to see what they had become, but I didn't hug any of them. I kept my arms around Erin and my mom, and I said my goodbyes. The Calyptra, it turned out, I could say goodbye to. My family, I could not. Cyrus was the last to leave the clearing. His good looks had wilted with age, his chest sagging and his hair thin to reveal a liver-spotted scalp. His hands were gnarled like claws. He didn't apologize. Instead, he said in a husky, dry voice,
She was the only real mother I ever had. I would have done anything for her. I couldn't help myself.
I thought of the scars on his back, and I pitied him. He'd been as lost as I was, maybe more, when Rebecca had gotten a hold of him. Then I thought of my passion for him and the kisses we'd shared, and I marveled at how easy it was to mistake desire for love. But now another veil had been lifted from my eyes. We all have a choice, I told him. He nodded, and then, like the rest of the Calyptra, he disappeared into the night. Rebecca was dead, and the fire that had consumed her under the altar had nearly burned itself out. My mom, Aaron, and I stayed to scatter dirt on the flames and douse them completely. My mom wept as she covered the remains of her mother with dirt, and I decided Rebecca was wrong. Love was not a choice. We love who we love, and our hearts want what they want. We can't help that. We're only human, even the Calyptra. I was Calyptra still, but I was also simply human. I had made so many terrible choices in my life, and I had lived for a long time filled with regret for the things I could not change. But it wasn't too late for me to change. It was time to move on. To move forward. Let's go home, I said when the fire was out and the smoke had cleared. I knew where home was now, and it wasn't a place. It was people. It was love. And love was as good as anima. And that was life. Epilogue. Life.
Are you sure you're ready for this?
Blake asked, slowing his forerunner and pulling to the side of the highway, where the overgrown road to Eclipse snaked through a rippling golden sea of grass. A month had passed since I'd last traveled that road, but then I'd been heading in the opposite direction, heading toward home. I think so, I said, biting my lip. A sense of deja vu gripped me, and I recalled the last time Blake and I had sat idling in his car at Folk Yeah Fest. So much had changed since then. Some things good, some bad. Some in ways that had yet to be determined. The day after I came home from Eclipse, after I almost lost everything and everyone I loved, the festival coordinators called to let me know they had good news and bad news. The bad news was that I had not won the contest, though I'd been a close third. The good news was that one of the other bands had heard my song and wanted to acquire the rights to it for their next album. The recording session had been that morning in Portland, and I'd been invited to listen and meet the band. The whole day had been like an out-of-body experience. I still felt high from it. Not anima high, not lose yourself high. Just up. Just good. Blake had driven me to Portland and watched the session with me. He and I hadn't figured out the romantic part of our relationship yet, but our friendship was alive and well, and that was what mattered most to me for now. During the drive back from Portland, we talked about everything and anything, with the exception of my time at Eclipse. I'd already told him all there was to tell about that, leaving out not a single detail, not even the parts about Cyrus. Blake had been understandably hurt and angry, but he also understood that my brief life with the Calyptra had been complicated. It wasn't a black or white situation. It was very, very gray. I looked over at Blake. Worry made a little tuck between his eyebrows. You don't have to take me, I told him. I can drive out with my mom another day. Mom visited Eclipse several times a week now that she owned the land and everything on it. Despite Rebecca's claims that my mom was dead to her, she'd never cut her daughter out of her will. Maybe because she didn't want to bother with going into the world to deal with a lawyer. After coming home, Mom and Aaron and I had spent hours discussing what to do about Eclipse and the land and the livestock living on it, and we finally decided to trust Detective Speakman with as much of the truth as we dared. We delivered to him a revised version of the events that had taken place at Eclipse, and let him take care of the rest. He knew there were things we'd left out of our story, but for some reason he let us get away with it. Maybe because it turned out he was a fan of the X-Files, and he understood there were some things in the world that didn't look good in a formal report. Besides, he had his hands full dealing with the bodies from the cave at Eclipse, searching for their identities and notifying the victims' families. I'd thought Mom would want to sell Eclipse as soon as the police turned it back over to her, that she would remove all ties to her past with the Calyptra. But Mom surprised Aaron and me when she announced she decided not to sell Eclipse. Mom wanted to convert it into an artist colony. My initial response to this idea was bleak. Eclipse had such a dark past. People had been killed there. They had lost their souls to a narcissistic, misguided woman there. I thought it might be better if Mom had the place boarded up, and we never set foot on that land again. But then I thought of my own dark history and the terrible things I'd done. There was darkness in me, but there was more light every day. I didn't want anyone to give up on me because of my past, and I couldn't give up on Eclipse for the same reason. Mom's artist colony would create good to take place of the bad. Art and beauty and music in the place of greed and addiction and death. We would start over, rebuild, do things differently this time around. Nothing lasts forever. Good is superseded by bad, and bad can be steered back toward good. The world is always in flux. Light falls to dark, and dark surrenders to light, and life moves on. At home, color was starting to return to the woods around our house, shoots of green thrusting up through ashen ground, life shaking off death. Blake reached across to me, took my hand, and wove his fingers through mine. He never hesitated to touch me anymore, and I was glad. I was tired of keeping people at arm's length, tired of holding back. When Blake pulled up in front of Eclipse House, my mom and Aaron emerged from the big front doors and came down to greet us. The two of them had been busy over the last month, going through all of the Calyptra's belongings and deciding what to keep and what to remove. The Calyptra themselves had not returned to the house. There had been stories on Oregon news blogs about a bizarre number of bodies, all of them belonging to elderly people, that had been found throughout Oregon, Washington, and Northern California. The bodies were desiccated and crumbled to powder when they were touched, rendering them unidentifiable. I couldn't decide how to feel about that. I'd loved the Calyptra, and I was sure they'd loved me. I missed them, but they were starting to seem like friends I'd made many years ago in another life. In a way, that's what they were. Sometimes I dreamed about them, and those dreams were good. And some nights I dreamed the Eclipse Moth was hovering over me, and I woke, wondering if there were other Eclipse Moths out there in the world, and if others would go in search of them, or if the Mother was the only one. I decided not to worry, to just let life be good. Aaron leapt off the porch and wrapped me in a fierce hug that nearly knocked the breath out of me. I kept forgetting how strong she was now. She'd decided to let me infuse her every day with a little bit of anima to keep her healthy. She'd accepted what I was, and we both accepted that we could not leave each other alone in this world. Neither of us would ever be normal, and we would always need each other. We would always be together, and we could live with that. "How was the recording session?" Aaron asked. "Tell me everything." Mom leaned against the porch and smiled down at us. There was sadness in her eyes, same as always, but it seemed for the first time in as long as I could remember, like something that might pass, a storm that might blow over. She had cried a lot over the past months, but it was better than what she'd done before, holding her sadness inside and suffering alone. Now Aaron and I were there for her. We were there for each other. "Okay," I told Aaron. "I'll give you the full report. I have to do something first." Alone, I headed out across the yard toward Bully's grave. The blanket of flowers the Calyptra and I had laid over the small mound of earth had dried up, so I picked a new armload of wildflowers to place on his grave. I kept hold of one poppy, my eyes burning with tears. The urge to cull the flower was strong, but I resisted. I fought every day to control my cravings. It wasn't easy, and it would never be, but I'd found a way to master my need. There was only one thing in this world that was better than taking anima, and I had it now. I had the love and acceptance of my family and Blake, who had seen the worst in me and still loved me. I couldn't change what I was, but I couldn't hide from it either. Anima was a fixture in my daily life, and it would be for as long as I lived, but I needed to feel my feelings, the good and the bad, instead of burying them. So I cried over Bully's grave, and I told him I was sorry I couldn't save him, and then I dried my eyes and took a few deep breaths, and headed back to the house. Blake, my mom, and Aaron sat in the porch chairs, chatting. My mom had brought out one guitar for each of us, including her old guitar and the one Stieg had made for me. Along with drawing his wonderful, weird art, Blake had practiced while I was at Eclipse, and had improved quite a bit. And now that Aaron's fingers were strong enough, my mom and I had started teaching her to play too. "Are you okay?" Aaron asked softly. It was obvious I'd been crying. I nodded and took the seat next to her, picking up my guitar. I am, I said, and meant it. What are we playing? I asked.
I heard a really great song this morning, Lake said, grinning, his hair falling across one eye.
He began to pick out the notes of my song, and when it was time, I sang. We all did.
This recording of The Killing Jar was presented by Dreamscape Media, LLC. Text copyright 2016 by Jennifer Bosworth. Sound recording copyright 2016, Dreamscape Media, LLC. Thank you for listening. Please check www.dreamscapeab.com for Dreamscape's latest releases.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.